Hello everybody and welcome back to Steam and Steel, the podcast all about heritage railways. Today, we're going to be chatting to Jamie Shaw, who was a boilersmith and also a volunteer at the Llangollen Railway. He has some very interesting stories to tell. I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say. So, let's dive straight into the episode and hear what he has to say. Hope you enjoy. Hello Jay, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you Matt. You're all right, bud.
I'm all good, thanks. It's really good to speak to you again.
Yeah, you too, man. You too, man.
It's been a while. It's been a while. So I can't thank you enough for being a guest on my podcast. I really...
Yeah, you're quite all right, bud. Quite all right.
Right, so tell everybody a bit about yourself.
I started an apprenticeship back in 2004. With a company called LNWR as a boilersmith and steam engine fitter. Yeah, this was in Crewe. And prior to that, I was brought up and raised in the south of England, around Hastings and Battle area. I suppose if you're going way back for that, my dad's the reason why I got into steam and railways in general. But I've got a bit of a, I wouldn't say a weird liking. I like continental stuff because of my dad. Because my dad's story is so integral to my story, really. My dad started on BR in 1969 on the Southern Region as an electromechanical engineer, and he basically sort of rose through the ranks as becoming engineer and test engineer for all sorts of projects on the Southern Region. He ended up as one of the top electromechanical engineers for the underground, and did that for about 14 years working in the tower.
Wow.
Yeah, working in the tower next to Canary Wharf. I've actually been up Canary Wharf as well when dad's work had an open day. Prior to that, my dad, he's traveled all across Europe, the whole of Europe pretty much. You can imagine it, Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania, and we're talking in the 70s and 80s, so it'd be the communist era behind the Iron Curtain. I think there's a picture of me dad when he was with a rail club that he joined, that they went over on a holiday to photograph trains and things in Eastern Europe. I think it might have been Poland, or it might have been Lithuania, I'm not sure. But anyway, he had his camera out at a station with the tour guide and his friends, and he took a picture of a Red Army troop train without knowing.
Yeah.
And in the picture, you could see, and my dad's still got the picture, you could see two officers in Stasi uniform walking down. And basically, my dad got arrested for being a heroic.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and through that, my dad's slides, and dad's, all the European trains, he went over to Sweden. Another interesting story about it, he went over to Sweden, I'm trying to think, it might have been the mid-80s, photographing trains. So I don't know if any of your listeners know, but the Swedish Railways, Svenska, I'm not entirely sure now, but anyway. They've got one of the biggest, or I think they still have, one of the biggest electric locomotives ever built, I think, at the time, called the DM3. And basically, it's an 080. No, it's a 280. 080. 280.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Three big units. And this electric locomotive is all rod drive. And I think it's something like 270 tons. An average pull of about, I think, 6,000 or 7,000 ton train, ore train, from Narvik to Kiruna. So my dad went over there in the middle of winter, photographing all this, great slide collection my dad's got. And fun enough, a bit of a sad story in a way. He got he took a photograph of a passenger train. I think in Stockholm. He didn't realize, but about 3 or 4 days after, there'd been a major incident, and a train had crashed, and believe it or not, my dad took a photograph of the engine before it left the station on its maiden voyage to its crash site.
And oh no!
It's horrendous and quite fascinating at the same time. He's got the original newspaper and he's got his original slides of it.
Wow!
So through my dad's passions of Continental Railways follows my passions really. So I and my dad also had a massive model railway. We're talking model railway size. Yeah. When we talk about big model railways, he had a HO, which is the same track gauge as what 00 is. It's just slightly smaller in the scale.
Yes, it is. It's the American scale, isn't it?
Well, American or Continental, depends who came
from. Yeah, Continental.
Continental, yeah. So my dad had a very, very, very extensive collection, to the extent where it must have been at least 20 foot B, of the 20 or 30 foot B, 15 foot layout.
How big, sorry?
20 foot. No, it's about 30 foot B, 15 foot.
Wow, that's huge.
And it was on two layers.
And
of course, he modelled German. So all the German electric locomotives, so E94s, E95s, the 143s, and quite a few others, I'm trying to think of now, off the top of my head now. And all the locos that he bought were all made in the continent by companies like Goodsold, Roco, Pico, Brahma, I think they're called. And all the electric locos had pantographs, obviously, and they could actually pick up the power from the overhead. So my dad set himself a challenge where he built a complete catenary system off his own back. It worked. And it was, yeah, the whole thing had catenary. It was complete catenary. And it was fascinating because if you run the railway for a couple of weeks, and you go up there, and you'd start set a train round, you'd see a little bit of arcing from the pantograph as it sort of burns dust away. It was fantastic. So imagine that when I was a 10-year-old, that certainly cemented my passion for what was to become for me.
I can certainly imagine that.
Steam and railways in general. So, yeah. And like I say, when I was 18, I tried to get myself an apprenticeship on the railway with surprisingly very little success, actually. There wasn't much in my area in East Sussex. There was very little around at the time. I had a few possibilities, but with not much of a... wasn't much in it, if you know what I mean. People
said
to me, oh, you can come and work for us, but you can do some experience first to see how you are. And there wouldn't be any job offer or anything. They'd just see me as free labour. So in the end,
just free labour. Yeah, that's wrong. That.
So in the end, I got myself I found Pete Waterman's place. At the time, it was owned by Pete Waterman before Hoskins bought it, and I managed to get the details, sent them a CV. About a week later, I got an interview. So I went up, had my interview with boss at the time, Richard Watkins, who was the boss actually before I left. Lovely bloke, salt of the earth, and he's one of them blokes that just knows his stuff. You know, he's a very good boilersmith, if not the best. Had an interview with him. That lasted for about 2.5 hours, I think. I think because my dad was coming with me, actually. I think we're just having a good chat about trains and stuff. So after that, I then got a call, or an email or a letter. I can't remember which now, saying we'd like to offer you an apprenticeship as a boilersmith and steam engine fitter. I packed my bags when I was 18 and left home and went to crew. And there endeth the story.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. That's absolutely amazing. Fair play. That's absolutely so. What do you do now then? Are you still doing that, or have you changed path slightly?
I I left Crewe, I think, because Hoskins had taken it over by then. Me personally, I was starting to lose faith with the Heritage scene quite a lot, actually. I won't go into it too much because I don't want to pull out dirty laundry. But things weren't right at Crewe, and a lot of us were very unhappy. And it's a real sad case, because there's one thing I'll never forget is the camaraderie between the lads. When you know, when you've got a boiler shop, and boilersmithing, it's a hard job. It's not,
yes, I can well imagine.
It's physical, it's noisy, it's dirty, it's horrible, really. And when you've got a group of lads doing it, and you get a real tight bond. And
yeah, I can imagine.
And that was just blown apart, really. And towards the end, I was losing faith. My work ethic was out the window. I decided I had to move for my own sanity, you know. And then I actually contacted a lad at Llangollen, asking, you know, is there any jobs going? He said, oh, are you thinking of moving? I says, yeah, I am. I'm getting fed up with Crewe. He goes, right, okay. I'll see what I can do. So I had another telephone call, I think with Graham Elwood, I think. I got an email saying I've got an interview. Did the interview and got the job. There I ended up boilersmithing at Llan for 2 years, which was an absolute joy. I loved it. I know the plan's been in the press a lot recently for certain things, but I'll tell you now, we're the best place I've ever worked. One of the nicest.
Well, I enjoy it there, otherwise I wouldn't volunteer there.
Exactly. One of the nicest places to work, and the lads, the crack with the lads was absolutely hilarious, and it was brilliant. It put my faith back in boilersmithing again a bit. I sort of lost my way with it until I went flat, and then I really got into it quite well. It took a while to adjust, like, but yeah, no, I loved it. It was great place. And then after that, I had to, my little one was, I think she was about one and a half. And then obviously from Llan to Crewe was quite a lot of mileage, of distance. And because of my missus going back to work, and she's from the old Towers area, Cheadle area, and that's where her job was, so we had to move over there. So we left Crewe, and I moved into a village quite close to the Cherney Valley Railway, surprisingly. And I still worked at Llan. So you can imagine how much of a distance. It's a good 2-hour commute. To be fair, it really started to take its toll on me. It battered me. So in the end, I decided, right, I've got to get myself another job that's close to home. A, for my family, and B, for my wallet.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, because it's a lot of money. So I then started looking around, and I put my CV out in a couple of places. I then got contacted by the HR department of the company that I'm working with now, Electromotive Diesels, in Longport. And I got a message through on the answer phone saying, hi, this is Lisa or something or other. We'll send you a CV. Would you like to have an interview? Please contact us. And before you know it, had my interview, got offered the job, and I've been there ever since. And you're probably asking, well, what do I do at Electromotive Diesels at Longport? Well, I'm my official title is fabricator welder, but I also do a lot of pipe fitting, copper work. Because of my boilersmithing and copper smithing background, dealing with copper. How that translates to Electromotive is we're doing a project where we're completely rebuilding the Class 56. So we're getting an original Class 56. It's built probably in the late 70s, ripping the thing to bits and completely rebuilding from the bottom up with bits out of a 66 in it. just finished the prototype, so that should be coming out soon. And to keep the locomotive in spec, we've got to use the original braking system, but we've got to change it. So that means copper pipework has got to be used, hence where the coppersmithing comes into it. So I've been running bits of copper pipe here, there, blooming everywhere. And that's been a challenge, to say the least. So, that's where I'm at the moment, really.
That's really interesting. Fair play. Do you enjoy it?
Yeah, it's a different job, actually. It's one thing I have noticed about it, from this job I'm doing now to my previous two jobs in the heritage movement, is money, actually, surprisingly. I think this is a topic that I think heritage railways can't really afford and can't really help with sometimes. You only do a job at a heritage railway, A, if you can afford it, and B, if you love it.
Yeah.
For those people who get paid a lot in heritage scene, you're very lucky. Because especially now in these times, the heritage movement is on its arse, let's be honest.
Yeah, it is, unfortunately.
Throughout this horrible situation we're in, Ashon, the dreaded C word, I have not been out of work. If anything, I've actually had overtime. So I've been incredibly lucky. And for me, it's been a very shrewd move. But my point being, outside industry pays a lot more than the heritage industry, which is a massive, massive way. And I don't think heritage can help that bit. It's just the fact that they don't have that much money. You're talking people who own these engines haven't got a limited amount of finite money. A lot of the times you hear people rebuilding engines and they run out of money midway through an overhaul. And that's common. That's very, very common. How many times do you see, appeals for engines to get rebuilt and things? And it's the money isn't there anymore.
No, unfortunately, it's not.
And it's going to get worse for a bit, unfortunately, because of this pandemic. So, that's a major thing. And that's something I noticed, like, when you got the first pay pack, I'm like, oh, wow, that's a lot more than the cost, man. Not to say that fan was cheap. Not at all, because I did get, when I moved to Flanders, I get a decent pay rise. But compared to outside industry, when you take it as a face value, the closest place to Flanders would be Wrexham, and you've got Wrexham Industrial Estate. You've got places like...
Yeah, well, that's where I work.
Exactly. You've got places like Prismium and other places that pay an awful lot more than what Flanders. So, you're fighting for blokes with decent skills and hands to go to places like Langrothlin when they're tempted by other places that pay more. For the bloke in question, it's a no-brainer. But for the railway, it can suffer because of that. So,
yes,
an issue, that one, I think.
No, I know what you mean. It is, but, as you said, people do it for the love of it rather than the financial gain of it.
I mean, I wouldn't have done it for... 16 years, 15, 16 years. I wouldn't do it.
No, of course not.
If I didn't love it. And I still love it, It's brilliant. So.
Fair play.
I'm very proud to call myself a boilersmith.
Yes, there's very few of you around. It's kind of a privilege to actually know you as a boilersmith, to be fair, because it's fascinating.
Yeah, it's one of them. You see a lot of people can do it, but to do it, right is the wrong term, but to really do it skillfully, I think, it takes a bit doing. I mean, just tooling a flange up, studding a copper flange, and jobs like that can be, physical hand skills to do it, and the knowledge to make the tools to tool the flange, but nobody knows how to do that really, apart from their fellow boilersmiths. And there are a few of us around. I mean, Riley's got quite a few. I know you've got HB Heritage Boiler. In fact, the Heritage Boiler, the lads who are finishing off the Patriot Boiler, I used to work with them at Crewe, so I know them very well. We've got a few of the lads at Hoskins' place. So yeah, there's quite a few of us around. But yeah, it's a job. It's a brilliant job, but I'm glad I'm out of it. And the other thing with it as well, I've noticed as well, is my hobby has become my hobby again. Now, I loved working with Steam. It's brilliant. But when you're faced with an owner that's got a chip on his shoulder because you've done something wrong, or God forbid, you know, management have done something you're wrong and you're trying to sort it out and you're trying to do the best you can.
Yes.
And you're looking at this steam engine, or you're looking at this boiler, you're cold, you're tired, and you're knackered because you've just done something very physical on the job, and then you just give up hope a little bit, you know, a piece of your dog inside,
yeah.
You know?
And it yes.
happened once or twice. Not going to lie on that one. But, yeah, I still wouldn't change it for the world. It's one of the best career paths I could have done, because it's taught me so much. And it's really given me an eye for what I do. And yeah, I love my job. You know, it's brilliant. I mean, I like where I am at Electromotive, but if the circumstances are right, and I could, I would go back Llangollen.
Well, I couldn't blame you either, to be fair. I really couldn't blame you, to be fair.
Yeah.
So, What's your favourite boiler? You know, since you're a boilersmith, obviously you've worked on numerous different types of boilers. What's been your favourite locomotive boiler that you've worked on, then?
I think that's a tough one. I think
I caught you there.
There's a few actually. Calborn, number 24 on the Isle of Wight Railway. That boiler, this is when I first started my apprenticeship at crew, because that boiler comes to crew. And we were doing some riveting on it, and then I got chucked on the riveting. It's the first time I ever did any riveting in my life. So, I did some bits of riveting on Calborn. So I suppose that one had to be one of the faves, for that reason alone. 80,072, actually, because I was the first person to stick a match to that boiler in preservation. And also the first.
How interesting!
Yeah, and also the first person to cook a butty on the shovel in preservation.
So, the proper way of cooking a butty. Proper way of doing it.
Covered in coal dust, but it tastes damn good, like, you know what I mean?
Butty does. It's the best butties you can ever have.
Definitely. Yeah.
It's like I've known a driver at Clan to actually cook a pizza.
Yes.
On the shovel.
Oh, I've heard of that as well.
That was fantastic. Yeah, just to see this. You're on the footplate at a station, and a driver just says, I'll grab me dinner now, and just pulls out a frozen pizza. A, where did you get that from? And B, what? Oh.
just think to yourself there, Matt, that's the most expensive pizzeria.
If you want the most expensive stone baked pizza you could ever have,
yeah, buy a Steve. I forgot what the question was.
Sorry. Funny enough, 80,072 is actually the first engine I ever went on the footplate of.
Oh, right, nice one.
So isn't that weird?
My first engine I ever had a footplate ride on was down in Kentony, Sussex, and it was a little 060 called Charles Wilton, I think it is.
Yeah.
That was my first footplate.
I do. So it's weird how you were the first person to stick a match into it. And I was the first person to go, it was my first footplate experience, if you like.
Yeah. Oh, it's a lovely engine. Actually, when I'm going to come to Clan, we're talking 5 years ago when I come to Clan. Was it four? Anyway, it was lovely to see that boiler again. Actually, it really was. And then I sort of got shoved on an A4 boiler again. And actually, to be fair, that one's been one of my favourites as well. The A4.
You've got to love them, haven't you?
And actually, that's been because I've worked on Bittern, I've worked on Union of South Africa an awful lot, worked on Snigel Gresley, and yeah, so I've worked on three A4 boilers in my time, which is quite something to say. Being where we were at Crewe, we had a lot of boilers from a lot of places. So, you know, and at the time when Crewe was had a really good name for itself before things went downhill a bit and Hoskins took over, we'd get inquiries and from people all over the UK and also from across the pond as well, from European Union. Like, in fact, one of my favourites I ever had a chance to work on, I suppose, would be the Swiss rack engine. Now, I didn't do a massive amount on it, but I did quite a lot of corking and a little bit of riveting and stuff on it. It was mainly my mate Dan and James who did that one, but I certainly helped with it a bit. And yeah, it's the Benzer Offenbahn, and it's loco number 7. And the boiler came across in a lorry. We craned it out. And rebuilt it in Crewe. Here's one thing on it is really good. And we had the Swiss people round coming out to look at the boiler, and we'd done it. Like, and we went out and got some bacon for them, cooked them all bacon butties and that on the shovel. the first thing they said to us, which struck us actually, this would have been January time we'd done it, I think.
Very
cold.
Just a bit.
They said, this country is very cold. I said, what do you mean? As well, in Switzerland, it's something like -10 at the moment. But in this country, it's a lot colder somehow. But it wasn't as cold, you know, from a temperature measurement. But it's because of the dry climate, because Switzerland's a very, very dry climate. Because obviously, it's a landlocked country, isn't it? Even though it's
got that makes sense. Yeah.
Dry climate, so obviously, they get a lot of snow, but it's dry air, essentially. So, they don't feel cold as much like we do in Britain, which is just a socky, damp hellhole at times.
That's just our summers.
It pretty much is, though, isn't it?
It really is, especially Wales. I mean, God.
To be fair, there's only one part of the UK where it's nice when it rains, and that is Wales.
Yeah, because we're so used to it, that's all it ever does.
So that number 7, I think, was one of my favourites. I think they're all my favourites, really, because I've got a passion, you know, the passion for them all, really. It's just passion for doing your job right as best you can.
Well, that's it, and that shows, you know, that does show.
Yeah.
You know, fair play. You've now recently started volunteering at Llangollen as well, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I sort of started volunteering when I was working there a bit, really. I'd started working on the panny tank boiler 7754 the weekends. And I've carried on with that. I'm on the footplate roster. I'm doing the boiler up. So I sort of still keeping the boiler smithing alive, so to speak. You know, I'm still doing it, keeping it in my hands, because I feel like it's an important skill to have. And it'd be a shame
agreed
to sort of just lose it and forget about it. So I'm kind of glad that I've got the opportunity to carry on practicing what little
yeah.
I know. But yeah, I've volunteered at FLAN now for about 4 years, I think, 4 or 5 years, thereabouts now. So I'm on the footplate roster as a cleaner. So see how that takes me.
You one of us?
One of us. One of them. Yeah, that's the one.
You one of us? Yeah, I'm a cleaner. I'm a cleaner too. I've just been made up from MPD to cleaner, so I'm officially on the clean footplate roster myself now. So woohoo! Yeah, it is a yay. Yeah, it's going to be fun. That is going to be fun.
Yeah.
Fair dues. Because let's be honest, when just telling the listeners a little story about us two, people used to get us mixed up.
A little bit, yeah. So, Matthew, not turning around. Oh, hey up, Jay. Where's Matthew?
That's it.
Times, isn't it? Yeah.
It did, yeah. Yeah, it really did.
Yeah,
it's because of the long hair and beard.
You've cut your hair now, haven't you?
Cut it, but it's growing back. I'm telling you, it's growing back. Oh, yeah. I can't. I miss it too much.
Yeah, I must admit, if I cut my hair, I'd feel like I lose all my strength. Like, was it Samson, wasn't it?
I thought it was David and Goliath. Or was it Samson? Oh, I can't remember.
Tales or
it was a myth. It was a mythical thing, wasn't it? Yeah. I could just see the rage of the comments now.
Get your facts right, boy.
Yeah, basically. I'm sorry.
See that one going down. Yay!
Oh, joys. So,
I also help a friend of mine at the moment who's rebuilding or building a 10.25-inch gauge railway. He's got a couple of locos and stuff, so I've been helping him with jobs. He's a friend of mine anyway. And I also am a volunteer at Amerton Farm, who coincidentally want me to have a look at one of their Bagnall boilers, which would be a really interesting thing for me because I've never done a 2-foot gauge narrow gauge boiler before. And I've never.
Oh, that will be interesting.
A marine firebox before. So I'm looking forward to that. That'd be good fun. I've never sort of set one of them up and whatnot. So yeah. I'm looking forward to that. But yeah. So like I say, I'm on the foot plate at Amerton. I think either clean or pass, but I think I'm pass clean at Amerton now. So yeah.
Fantastic stuff. That's great stuff. Now, I've got to ask, and I think you knew this question was coming. You have a very impressive G gauge railway, don't you?
Yes, this is one of my other obsessions.
That is why this was going to lead in nicely to this question here. So please tell everybody about your G gauge railway.
Okay, yeah. Well, because of the German railways that my dad got me into. Well, actually, I think I should start this one off a little bit with when my dad bought me my first model railway. And my dad being my dad, he didn't just go out and got a Hornby set with a Nelly or a Smokey Joe. No. Did he heck as well? He made me a board. I can't remember the size of the board. I think it might have been about... Anyway, he made me a fairly decent-sized board with a railway on it. And this railway was HOE. Now, HOE is 009, but the con...
Yes, narrow gauge.
But not only that, he actually bought a load. He bought a load of Austrian electric locos for it. The railway in question is the Maritz Ellersbahn, and they've got some of the oldest working narrow gauge electric locos in the world. I don't think they're the. But anyway, they're a really beautiful, beautiful engine. Lovely railway. And he bought me this, and he built it himself. And these all had overhead wire pickups as well. So he built like a catena and everything, and yeah, it looked absolutely mint. So he made that for me, and I was like, great. You know, I was loved playing that. Then we went over to Austria. He actually took me over to Austria, and we travelled on the Maritz Ellersbahn. So.
Oh, wow.
The original electric, so that's a hell of a privilege that was.
I can imagine.
It's in between that and my dad's big railway. I was looking at the German narrow gauge because I started to really get into that with my dad. My dad was into it as well. Dad's into
yeah.
continental stuff, really. Anyway, I started looking at, there's a brand out there called LGB. Linden Grossbahn, I think it was, or something like that. I started looking at the starter sets, and with the starter sets, you get an oval of track and a little 040 called the Steins, and a couple of wagons with it in the controller. So I started looking at it, said, oh, I'd love one of these. Like, oh. And he started looking at it, and knowing how bad of a collector my dad is, he's like, ooh, I like the look of that. And he started looking at some of the other locos. Oh. So we ended up with a starter set. This would have been about 20 years ago. he liked it that much. We started buying more of it. And then more of it. got it set up in the garden. Got a really, really big setup going. Well, you've seen bits of it before, haven't you? You've seen the videos on YouTube and that bit.
You have. And speaking of your YouTube, watch your channel name so people can go and check
really
it out.
Prepared. I can't remember. I'm really bad.
Well, I'll make sure that I leave a link in the description on this video.
I haven't touched it in years, if I'm honest. But anyway, so we started collecting and collecting. And it's got to the stage now where we've got, I think, about 20 locos. At least 20 locos. A lot of stock, an awful lot of stock. And I've got a, because I like drinking the beer, I like German beer in particular. I think it's wonderful stuff.
I wonder why too.
Yeah. And I got this obsession with collecting beer wagons. So I ended up collecting beer wagons, and now I've got about 17 beer wagons. Because LGB, they do sort of special run paint schemes. And all of various different things. And every now and then they'll do an odd beer wagon. So I've been sort of collecting all the odd ones, and now I've got an absolute load of them. It looks quite smart on the train. Excuse me. And I've got the Saxon Mayors, I've got quite a few of the large meter gauge German Malays, we've got Hartz 2102, we've got the Hartz roller wagons, so basically the piggyback wagons, similar to the Leaker manifold piggyback wagon, but a German equivalent. Lovely bit of kit. Got coaches, we've got a set of Swiss Pullmans on our line. we've got an awful lot, and we've got an awful lot of diesels and bits and pieces. And between me and my dad, we've amassed a very big collection of this stuff. It's been a bit of a lifelong passion, really. Railways in general, and certainly with the larger scale stuff, it's really nice. It's just something about it. When you pay, it's a lot more money, admittedly. But when you sort of get it and look at it and hold it, view it, and play with it, it is more like a real train than you realise. Especially with the way we sort of lay our track in the ground, because we lay it in the ground like a real railway. We have ballast. We don't fix it down with anything. It's the ballast that does the work. Even gets to the stage where we've had it, was it 4 years ago, where we actually had miniature frost heave of the track, and the track went all out of line, because obviously the frost goes into the ballast, so if the ballast has got water in it, and then obviously the frost will turn to ice or something, and then it expands and it pushes the track and the ballast up, so you get frost heave. And we got like a layer of track with frost heave, and it was all over the place. And like, my dad was excited. He says, "Wow, we've got miniature frosty!" Like,
love that. Love that.
Yeah. So, not only that, I've got quite a lot of. Well, I've started getting myself into the 16mm side. I've got three Linton Barnstable 262s in 16mm scale. Two live steam and one electric.
Oh, nice.
That's nice. Another obsession. I'll say obsession because it does become a bit of an obsession at times. So I do have to step back and think, do I really need to buy it? No, but it would look good on the shelf. And then you just justify to yourself, I want that. I'm going to have that. Yeah.
Fair dues. I was going to say, sorry to go back to the YouTube thing. It's just occurred to me speaking about it. We've actually done a video together on my channel, which I'll leave a description in. I'll leave in the link, a link for, in the description. And we did. It was basically about half an hour video, wasn't it? On your stuff.
It's one of the Saxon Mayors models that I've got.
That's it. I'll make sure I leave that in the description below. So go and check that out.
Definitely. But at some point soon, when we can visit each other, when it's socially acceptable to do so, it'd be good to do another video.
Yep. I don't think it'll be ever socially acceptable for us to meet again, let's be honest, especially not us two.
No, especially
when there's beer involved, isn't it? Oh, that's true. Oh, God. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, it's, I've, like I said, I've got a large collection of the Garden Rally stuff. And it's I find it a joy to own and a joy to play with. I say play with because I tend to find a lot of people in the hobby are too anally retentive about how they do things, and you know, they're just a bit touchy with things. And I get having a passion,
yes,
and being passionate about it. Don't get me wrong, but I just think sometimes you lose the point of actually having a railway when you can't share the joy that it's giving you with other people. And
that's
I
it.
Tend to find, you know, you get that a lot. I tend to find with certainly the 16mm scale a little bit, that they can be very, very rigid with things, I think. Certainly, you know, me and my mate Tom Ivers. In fact, he actually owns a decal, a printing company called Endon Valley Decals. Me and him have steam ups all the time. So I take my engines around to his line. We have a really good night steam up, proper thrash around his line. Like, this hell of a line. Brilliant, lovely, lovely line. Anyway, we'd be doing it like at night, and between us, we've got like a load of paraffin lamps, so we put them all out on the track side, and they're playing like live steam, like doing 12 o'clock at night. We're beering around, shivering, thinking, "Yeah, this is really good." They're just fun.
Yeah, just, oh, I love that
silliness in the hobby. You know, I always try and look at the price.
But that's it. That's the fun part, is the silliness in the hobby, isn't it? You know, it's yeah, I get it. That's it, and I get it. And to be fair, people do take it seriously. It looks phenomenal, but as you said, you've got to have fun in it sometimes as well, haven't you?
I think sometimes people forget about that. You know, people genuinely forget to have fun in the hobby. And I actually think that's a certain amount of that's true with the heritage scene a little bit as well. And that's a whole different board game, but yeah.
It is.
Yeah, it's
it's a
brilliant hobby, and it's something I'd recommend to anyone with any size garden, because you can put a rowie in anywhere.
It's like I plan to. Don't tell the missus, but I actually plan to have one myself.
I remember you saying about that. Yeah, yeah, it's a brilliant hobby. I've loved it. I mean, we've got to the stage now. Me and my dad, referring back to the LGB. We're running scale length trains. So a Hearts 2102 going up the Brocken, for instance, would on average have between 6 to 8 carriages behind it. Now, when you've got a 45mm scale track width, that's quite a long train.
Yeah.
When a coach is
about, it is,
nearly 2 foot per coach. So you can imagine the length of the train and the loco. It looks absolutely hellfire. It has to be said. It does look nuts. There's no other way of putting it, really. But yeah, it's a brilliant hobby. I love it. It's always kept me going. Always on eBay looking for things. Yeah, like you do with that hobby.
That's a dangerous game.
Very dangerous.
So with you saying you like your German stuff, then I've got to ask the question: what is your favourite loco? Is it German? Is it British?
I don't know. To be truthful, I think anything that's a bit unusual.
Okay.
If I was to split it down, my favourite sort of English engine wouldn't be one that's built for this country. It would have to be, say, one of the Kits and Mayers that was built for Brazil or somewhere like that, because them things look absolutely phenomenal. I don't know if you've ever seen them. They just look, the meter gauge Kits and Mayer. I think one of them was a rack engine as well. It's just the most awesome looking bit of kit. When you look at it, you think, Jesus Christ, look at the size of that. Even in the photo, look, it looks good. It's just beautiful. them kits are amazing, lovely. Like that one they've got, that Bagnall built one they've got at the W&L.
Oh, love the Bagnall engines.
That kits and Mayer, that Bagnall Mayer they've got. Hopefully they'll put that up sometime.
Yeah.
Yeah, kits and Mayers, I suppose, I'm a big fan of. I think they're beautiful engines.
How about the Garretts? Yeah,
they're okay. They're nice. They're nice. I wouldn't say they're my favourites, but they are certainly one of the ones that I do like, and I have got a soft spot for them. I suppose German or Continental engines-wise, I've got a few different types. I think the E94 is one of my favourite German electric locos. I must admit, I do love the DM3s. They're big Swedish or freight locos. They're a hell of a piece of gear. But honestly, go search Swedish Railways DM3 and you'll see exactly what I mean. These things are absolutely phenomenal. They're just...
I'll put all these on my Facebook page. The photo, I'll get some pictures off the Google and I'll put them on my Facebook page.
Hell of a piece of kit. I suppose German loco wise, really. I like them all, really. They're all nice. It's a Czechoslovakian built locos, specifically the ones built by Skoda. Now, I never knew this till a couple of years ago, that Skoda actually built steam engines.
I never knew that.
Czechoslovakian engines, and you see the smoke deflectors on the front of the engine, you'll see a blooming great big Skoda badge. So it's, that's been in. And obviously, I don't really know much about the Czech Republic, but Czechoslovakia, whatever it's called nowadays. But it's, I think it must be quite a hilly country, because they've made these, one of them I think was a three-cylinder 482 or something like that. It's just the most impressive looking engine, and it just looks the business. You know, when you look at an engine, you think, yeah, that means something serious, that does. Their engines just,
yes.
Beautiful.
I like that with the 9S.
Exactly. I think them Czech engines look gorgeous. Really do. And they've got all the one that's painted in bright blue. It looks stunning. It looks really stunning. So, yeah, I'm slowly getting my way into them a bit. And, yeah, I don't really have a favourite engine as such. I just like what I like, if you know what I mean. If it appeases my interest, you know what I mean? I like it, you know.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that, fair dues. Personally, I think my personal favourite has got to be the 9F. Absolutely love them. Well, I wouldn't have a tattoo of it on my arm otherwise.
I think because my dad and my broad interest, I haven't got one favourite engine. I just like a lot of. I mean, I suppose. Well, no, not even that. See, I would possibly say maybe the Q6 because I worked on it at Crewe. I'll tell you what, that actually British engines wise, I'd say the Q6, Q6 and the Q7. Oh, what a piece of kit they are! I remember walking around it because we just put the boiler in the frames and we're just piping everything up and getting everything done and ready to stick a match to it and test it. And it's got one of them steam reversers. And so we were playing about with that, seeing how that works, and sorting that out and doing bits. And it's just the most impressive bit of kit. I was really impressed with the engine. It's lovely. And one thing that amazed me by it, because obviously the Q6 is an 080, and it's one of the engines that's built to do 10 miles an hour up a hill with about 2,000 tonne of coal behind it. You know, it's one of them engines. It's a slogger. When you look at the size of the piston rod, and it shocked me, actually. The size of the piston rod was absolutely ginormous. It must have been a good 5 to 6 inches diameter. It was just huge. It just looked big. When you look around the engine, you see how everything just looked so over-engineered on it, like just so it wasn't going to break under the sheer strain To be fair, I've got a bit of a soft spot for that engine. That being the favourite British engine. So, yeah, hope that answers your question.
Mm. It certainly does. So that leads me on to another question then, since we've talked about locals. What railways do you like to visit then? Obviously, you volunteer at Llangollen, but is there any that you go, yes, go visit that place, because I like it?
I suppose one of my favourite, and if not, I personally think I might be biased here, but I think one of the best narrow gauge railways in Wales is the Welsh Bourne Llanfair, and actually that's one of the railways I do love to go. It's a beautiful line, beautiful engines, beautiful stock. I do think that that's probably one of, if not the best narrow gauge railway in Wales by far. I really do. And also the people are dead nice and friendly, and you can actually have a chat with them. Like some of the others, some of them can, not naming any names, but a lot of them can be very stuck up and very, what are you doing talking to me type of attitude. I found that with a few, which is a shame, but unfortunately it happens. But the W&L, whenever I've talked to the drivers or the final or anyone, any bloke in a pair of ovals wandering around the shed locker I've chat with, just been dead nice. And you know, that goes a long way. That really does go a long way. that for me,
yes,
it's lovely because Welshpool itself is a lovely town.
It is a nice town, to be fair.
That's very important.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it certainly is.
I'd say it's probably one of my favourite places to visit. And recently, Gala, and they had the Austrian 062 over. I think it's a Zillertal Series 2, which I've actually got the LGB model of. So I must admit, I was a bit of a fanboy on that day because I was having a rock. that did it for me. That did. Seeing that thing go up the banks at the W&L, that did it for me. I was happy.
Kid in a sweet shop moment.
Thing that was.
Oh, fair play. That's fair play. No, I don't blame you for that, really. Yeah. Don't blame you for that.
Go on, mate.
So, go on. I was just going to lead on to my next question, but carry on.
I suppose narrow gauge wouldn't be that. Standard gauge, it's got a slam. I think there's two reasons.
Yep.
One, I know most of the people there. And two, it's just a lovely railway.
It is a pretty line. I'm not just saying that because I volunteer there. It genuinely
is a
pretty line.
I've played on it many a time now, and it's just very, very pretty. You know, it's lovely. Yeah,
it is, especially when you go over the bridge with the River Dee coming below you. It just looks ace.
When the last went up, actually, because they're obviously replacing the bridge timbers on the Dee Bridge, aren't they? I walked up the track and had a look like, and I hadn't actually just stood on the bridge and had a look before until that day, but it's just stunning. You just stood there thinking, God, this is really pretty.
But it's nice all year round. In winter, when it's snowing, it looks gorgeous. And when it's summer and all bloomed, it also looks gorgeous.
The banner, I think, is when autumn. Because when you come out of the Berwyn tunnel, you carry on, like, all the trees, all the colours are just so vibrant and red. And it looks stunning. It really does.
Yeah, totally agreed.
That, to me, is biased. I might be biased, but, you know. Why not? So, that for me is one of probably the best railways, I think, anyway.
I've got to ask, since you've been around, that sounds a bit horrible, but you know what I mean, since you've been around and you've done this on the other, have you got any amusing stories from anywhere you've worked or any railways you've been to?
I've got loads, I suppose. I remember when we'd first, this is one from a while ago, when we'd first rebuilt Great Marquis, 61994, John Cameron's engine at Crewe. Watkins was just starting to move it off down the yard for the first time. Watkins was there trying to open up and thinking, oh, something's not quite right here. And we were going down the track and he thought, right, I'll just give it a long full. And my God, that's the funniest thing I've ever seen. I don't know how, but the body warmer somehow was lodged in the blast pipe and it didn't come out. Don't ask me how.
Oh. Anyway,
he gave it a right handful and this body warmer must have shot up 60 foot in the air. It just flew up and then landed in a rock splat, sort of steaming away. We're like,
oh, no.
That was funny. That was funny. I think another one. This is a Flam story, actually. When we were rebuilding Sir Nigel Gresley's, is it Sir Nigel Gresley at Flam? Yeah, Sir Nigel Gresley's boiler. Me, Graham, and Sam. I won't put this. Basically, we were taking the Mick out of a former employee.
Okay.
It was really funny because you'd walk past and it would get me, Graham, and Sam would go, like this all the time. And we'd just talk in this language like that. And we'd go, you've gone a bit too fast. I'm not so like good with numbers. Taking the mix. We got to the stage where we were jacking the outer wrapper to the tube plate in. We just fitted, and I managed to trap me hand between the jack, and just went, son, trap me up. I actually stayed in character when I was in pain.
What?
That was just the crack of the lads, you know, when you're in the time, you're in the zone, you're in the moment, when you're with your mates, and, yeah.
We're definitely a weird bunch, aren't we?
What we find funny, other people do not. That's a fact.
No, totally. Oh, yeah, I agree there.
Without a shadow of a doubt. So,
true.
I suppose one of my favourite memories from when I was at Crewe was regarding Union of South Africa. I was privileged enough to be able to go out on the engine on the mainline tour. I did a few. With
yeah.
And I managed to I got a footplate ride all the way from Crewe, because we got dragged to Crewe to Liverpool Lime Street. And I don't know if you know Liverpool Lime Street, but it's basically the track bed is right in the bottom of a great big blooming, I don't know what you call it, canyon or cutaway. It's very, very steep.
Yeah.
And we got dragged in by a 47. And then that pretty much did nothing, and then let the A4 do the rest, pulling out because we were doing the Holyhead special. So from Liverpool Lime Street to Llandudno to Holyhead, I think. And, oh my God, the noise!
Yeah,
the noise. When you've got 10, and then, when you've got 10, and a dead 47 on the back with an A4 going out Liverpool Lime Street with that noise, that was just. Oh, that was something else. Because it's a three-cylinder engine, so when it gets up to a certain speed, it starts getting to that trot pattern. It sounded like shot.
Yeah.
It was just unbelievably how awesome that was. It was very.
People do underestimate the power of steam engines, don't they, in a strange way?
Yeah, they do. They do. Well, I think it's because people don't understand it now because steam's been out for so long. People just don't understand what steam is. They don't understand. It's simple as. When you think about it, if you've got a two-cylinder car engine, you're only getting two power strokes per whatever revolutions of the crank. If that's a steam engine, you're getting double that. And every other revolution,
Of course you would.
Then becomes a lot more torquey, a lot more powerful. But it's just steam itself it's not because it's not in mainstream anymore. Nobody really uses it except for power generation. That's great big, you know, high pressure power turbines. So
this is true.
That was one of my favourite times, and I just remember just having my head out the window listening to this engine. And when it started to get to speed, he sort of opened it up a bit more, and the thing really started to rock on itself as it was powering along. And, oh my God, the sound. It was just unbelievable.
I wish I was there for that. I really do.
It was something else. Oh, I'll never forget that.
Oh, but not. Fair play. Yeah, I'm rather envious.
So very, very lucky. Very lucky with that one. trying to think of any others.
Fair play.
You know, it's weird. When you put yourself on the spot like this, you know you've done a lot, but you can't remember nothing. This is weird.
No, it's always the way. It's always the way. But I'm definitely going to be having you back on.
That'd be awesome, yeah. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. So it's been a pleasure chatting to you, but I have got a couple of quick fire questions, unless there's anything else you want to add.
Not that I can think of, no. Not that I can think of. Put me on the spot. I don't think.
But I'm going to put you even more on the spot now. All right, quick fire questions before we end. Question one. What's your favourite beverage?
Is anything that tastes nice that I feel the mood for. So it can be... There are days when I just want something that I can stand a spoon in that could knock my socks off. And there are days where I want something light and refreshing like a gin and tonic. But it's going to be decent. I am a man of many genres of alcohol, if that is such a thing.
Oh, yeah. What an answer. Anything that tastes nice, obviously. All right, what about non-alcoholic?
I love coffee. Stupidly strong coffee. I am a bit of a sucker for that.
Although I've only ever seen you drink tea.
You drink tea at a railway because you know you can easily make a cup of tea. Coffee, to make a decent cup of coffee that's not instant, it's a bit more difficult. So I don't...
Well, yeah, you need ground beans and filters, but...
I don't tend to bother. I tend to just stick with tea in other places. Like, if you go around someone's house, and this is no disrespect to anyone, but you always say, I'll have a cup of tea. Because, you know, I have my tea, I have the tea bag left in, and a little bit of milk, and that's it. No sugar. And I know very little people can muck that up. Even if you put a little bit too much milk in, it still ain't half bad, you know? So I know that's a safe bet. Whereas a coffee... They pull out like the Red Mountain roast from blooming Iceland. You know you're in for a bad cup.
Well, I must admit, next time you're round at mine, I'll make you a decent coffee because I've got filters and all sorts here. So. Good. Anyway, I digress. The most important question's coming next. What's your favourite pie?
Chicken and chorizo.
Oh, chicken, good answer.
I do like chorizo. I do like chicken. And combined, it's a thing of sex. sorry, I love chorizo. It's brilliant.
Brilliant. And the last question, what's your favourite band?
At the moment, Orange Goblin. I love... Right, as you know yourself, mate, I am a bit of a metalhead at heart, and I've been and seen a lot of heavy metal bands in my time.
Same here.
Frightening the amount of bands I've seen. That's just frightening the amount of bands I've seen, and people have died now. But you know what I mean?
Oh. Like,
the original Slipknot lineup, the original Slayer lineup.
Yeah.
And of course, Rico Hanneman. Oh,
yeah.
I can't remember his full name now. He's dead. Then you've got Paul. Is it Paul Gray from Slipknot?
Digressing, we are here. Yeah. This is, it's all part of it.
Yeah. Anyway, Orange Goblin. Orange Goblin.
No, for me, it's the same with me.
Yeah,
for Twisted Sister.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I've seen the original lineup.
I saw Twisted Sister with the original lineup.
Because it's the drummer's Twisted Sister, isn't it?
You know.
Is it drummer?
What's that? Sorry, bassist. Yeah, I think the bassist went.
So many people died out of rock and roll. Can't remember who's who now.
Oh, I know, yeah. This is true. But the guy from Children of Bodom's recently gone as well, didn't he?
I didn't get to see Children of Bodom. Yeah, Alex, Life. No. No, I'm...
Yeah, I just missed out on seeing them.
So I can't get the names out. Yeah. Who else? Yeah, digress. Orange Goblin.
Orange Goblin. Fair dues. Right, well, it's been an absolute joy and a pleasure having you on, Jay. It really has.
I hope I'm interesting. That's all I can say.
You have been. Trust me, because I've known you a long time now, but not even I knew half the stories you were telling then. That's fantastic. Well, seriously, thank you very much for coming on my humble little podcast. It means a great deal.
Well, I look forward to speaking to you soon and being on again.
Same. Well, you stay safe and take care of yourselves.
And stay safe, everyone.
Yep, and we'll catch you all soon.
Okay, so a massive thank you to Jay Shaw on that episode. It was really interesting to hear it from a Boilersmith perspective. My next guest on the next podcast will be Tom Peacock, a volunteer from Llangollen who's also a fireman, who does have some amusing stories to tell. So thank you for tuning in, stay safe, and I'll speak to you next time. Bye!